I remember Angie telling the story about the founding of the Mahayana, and it was really just a bunch of lay people, notably men and women, sitting like this around a stupa. And I always feel that when I'm facing in, you know, during the session when I was, you know, I felt, yeah, this is what we're doing. And I feel that during tea also. Tea is my favorite time for many reasons, but that's a big one. I think tea is also the time that we just feel the encouragement of each other after a hard day of sitting, and especially the encouragement of our teacher, Angie. I just communed with Angie. I was trying to think of what to say, and I went to the Dokusan room, and I sat in the cushion opposite what would be the teacher's cushion, although it wasn't Angie's chair. But I thought, well, you know how some things seem right and some things don't seem right. It didn't feel right to sit in the teacher's seat, and it was a good choice because I was facing Angie's seat, and we're all having that opportunity. And I hear that Angie's doing okay, right?
She is, and she wanted to tell everyone that she's hearing her thoughts and she's sending her love.
Yeah. Thank you.
She sounded better.
So. She always says it better. I've been thinking, Donna Lynn, who also had to leave temporarily, suggested that I tell the story of my way-seeking mind, since that would be easy to do since I just heard about it. And I go, well, what's that? And, well, I know what the way-seeking mind is, but I don't know what the story is. I've never been good with narrative. I know, though, that the biggest encouragement, one of the biggest encouragements I get in the last few years is the gratitude for the teachings, and gratitude for the teachers. And when we say that in the morning, I just can't bow low enough, you know, when we're doing the gratitude for our teachers. And I feel that way right now. But I'll talk about my teachers. I have to start with one that wasn't a Zen teacher, but she just comes up. It's Miss Poor in fourth grade, who I loved when I first saw her, even when I was in third grade, because she always was dressed up, and she had long earrings, and she was really tall. Well, I was pretty tall too for my age, and I don't know why, I just liked her. But finally I got to be in her class. But before that, in third grade, I snuck into her class when class was over and hid behind the chairs in the last row just to watch her. And then when I finally got to be in her class in fourth grade, I remember when she sat down under her desk and bent over, I kissed her cheek. You know, women then had real powdery cheeks. So, I mean, the real gratitude for her, she used to play the auto harp, you know, and she traveled around the world. She liked to climb mountains. And so she'd sing hiking songs. And one of them was, "Hearken, hearken, music sounds afar." You know that one? Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, yeah. It's probably not very hard to play on the auto harp, but I was impressed. Funiculi, funicula. Oh. Yeah. And She was still climbing Mount Tokwitz, which we know in San Diego. It's in a mountain fairly near us, and it was very near where I lived. She was still climbing to the top of Mount Tokwitz when she was 85. And I keep trying to tell Balin that I wanted to start doing it now so I can still do it later. She also sang, do your ears hang low? Do they wobble to and fro? And I thought it was kind of a special song for her because, you know, as you get older, your ears get bigger. And she wore dangly, you know, she wore clip-on earrings. And so her ears really did, you know, hang low. And she was happy about it. Do your ears hang low? Do they wobble to and fro? And she was great. She was actually became a friend of our family, and so I got to know her throughout my school years. And then I search, and I kind of made it through high school and college without having anyone like that. Maybe that's a time when you don't. I don't know. So I didn't have another teacher until I sat down in the Zendo in Santa Cruz. My friend Tommy Tucker, my husband and I were building a boat, and he was also building a boat. He was a boat builder. And he told me about the Zendo there in Santa Cruz. And so I finally made it. I had childcare, and I went to the Zendo. And Coven walked in while I was facing the wall. And I just remember his sure, grounded, quiet footsteps going by. And it didn't, I mean, that was it. I mean, I had to see him, I suppose, but I don't really think so. I think that was really it. And then he spoke, and, you know, there was no doubt in my mind that he was my teacher. And I'm enormously grateful for Coven. And I hope I was at the time, too. I'm glad to say, you know, sometimes when your parents die or someone that you love dies, you feel bad that you weren't more grateful at the time. I was grateful in my, you know, 25, 26-year-old way. I really was, and devoted. I guess Coben was someone like Angie, and I believe Michael, too, that people adored. And he loved it. And it's like he loved being with us the way Angie loves being with us. And also we cracked him up. He just couldn't believe some of the things we'd say, you know, and so we'd kind of stick his tongue right in his cheek, you know, and he leaned over, oh, really? You know, he really cracked him up, and he enjoyed us, and of course we just, as I said, adored him. I had my first Okasan very soon after I went to see him for the first time, and Tommy Tucker told me, well, ask him how to sit. Ask him about your posture and how to sit Zazen. Just great advice. I mean, what we get taught at that stage about our posture is so much what we need over and over and over again, as well as the jokes. And then kind of making fun of us when we get too serious, which he did frequently. I can remember a lot of his jokes, so-called jokes, tongue-in-cheek jokes, like when I said, I really thought I, you know, was really serious and I should go to Tassajara, and never mind that I had a, you know, 1 or 2 year old daughter, right? but I wasn't going to say I should go to Tassajara because I didn't want to, well, I knew I couldn't, but I wanted validation about my seriousness. And tongue-in-cheek, he said, oh, I didn't, I said I really needed more training. He said, oh, I didn't know you were an athlete. I was thinking about Sachin's where he wasn't there, and it's easy to recall Sachin's where he didn't come. And there's a very strong practice with a, you know, the Los Altos group, and Angie, of course, notable in that group. Sachin went on, and Copen would show up. He had childcare duties a lot of the time, or other things, but he came, and we didn't know when. And gave a few Santa Cruz Sachins in the mountains, and I was thinking of Balin today because when I was sitting there communing with Angie's pillow, now I don't think this was anything to be applauded at all, and I didn't at the time. However, Balin put a rubber ducky, a bathtub rubber ducky, on Coben's seat. And someone, one of the other students of that time at the 10-year reunion, told Balin that that was one of the most important moments of his practice, right? I'm extremely grateful to Coben, and I did feel enormous regret and even guilt when he died, because when he left Santa Cruz, I didn't follow him again. I was a single mother, and thought I had things going, and I thought maybe I should try to get a job. So I went back to school, got a master's in creative writing, and I actually got a job. But, you know, I thought he'd always be around to check back in with, and time went by. I met Michael. Michael doesn't remember because I remember, but Michael doesn't remember. He came to the Zendo and visited when I lived at the Zendo. He came with Luke, I think, or something. But I do remember you, and I, this is segueing into my poetry teachers, but it's not the same. I went to Naropa to go to a poetry workshop. I guess I went there 3 different times for a week-long poetry workshop. And who was there leading the morning meditation but Michael? And it was just so, what do you call it when you come home, you know, after you've been gone, the prodigal daughter. There was Michael, and he was talking about the dragon, about the man who was so interested in dragons, and he collected dragons, and he had, I don't know, he probably had suki of dragons and sculptures of dragons and paintings of dragons, right, Michael? He had all kinds. But he told the story of, you know, when the dragon heard about this and came in the window, he was terrified and he ran away. And so he ended the short talk with, don't, watch out. Watch out, the real dragon may come in your window. Just, I seem to be starting at recent ones now, of just yesterday, of that wonderful Shuso, incoming Shuso ceremony, and Cliff looked around and said, "You're all perfectly beautiful. Everything's beautiful. How can I lead you?" And Michael said, "Never mind, just keep leading us." Cliff, I know from way back in the Los Altos times, and I really always have admired Cliff. And since I started coming to Sesshin's at Jikoji, and we're doing it again, we sat almost every time next to each other. I mean, in my part, by choice, I try to sit next to Cliff. And when it came to when I was ordained, having someone help me with my robe and put my robe on, it was Cliff. I have so much gratitude. As I will be saying, I hope, 10 years from now, when I think back to this room and see people that are sitting in this room and think of them. And I hope they're still here. I hope I'm still here. I hope so.